It's tech time, and our expert tonight is Claire Porter, joining me from our Sydney studios. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Is Silicon Valley sexist?
Oh, sexist is such a divisive word. I would argue that there is a gender disparity in Silicon Valley, absolutely, but I don't think the intent is to deliberately push out women. I do think, though, that there does seem to be an awful lot of male dominance within technical industries, and I think that that is a historical precedent, and I think a lot of these companies are doing as much as they can to ensure that gender equality catches up. But I think that's very hard when you have male-dominated cultures. They have to change manage to allow for new genders, new cultures, more diversity within these various technical workplaces.
They don't have as much of a problem with actual racial diversity. They actually have a problem mainly with gender.
I mean, I think racial diversity and gender diversity are interlinked. I would imagine that there is probably a little more diversity amongst cultures than across genders. To say that, you know, one is more inclusive than the other is probably a bit of an irrelevant argument. I do think that when you have industries that are run and dominated by predominantly white men, I think that that when it comes to actually developing technologies for different cultures, there are a lot of blind spots. So I think the more inclusive technical industries and technology industries can be, the more people they're going to serve that can come on as consumers and either invest, whether that's at a corporate level or whether you're going to put your hard-earned income towards the devices, software, technology that comes out of the valley.
On RN Drive, my guest is Claire Porter, a technology expert. Now, The Guardian revealed today that personal details of world leaders were accidentally revealed by G20 organisers. How embarrassing. How did that breach in protocol even happen?
Oh, this is the worst timed digital gaffe I think I've ever seen. This comes less than a week after the mandatory data bill was passed by the government with support of the opposition. And then less than a week later, it turns out that when you're auto-forwarding messages and auto-correcting, you're including a whole bunch of information that shouldn't have gone out into the public sphere. So I think when it comes to storing secure information, particularly that of world leaders, I really think the government and its associated departments really need to tap down the security before they start to collect even more information.
Is it true the Immigration Department never told those concerned about the breach?
Supposedly, this is the first that any of these people involved have heard of this. And I think that these breaches are new to a lot of government departments, which just goes to show how little concern there is for how data is being stored, what systems they're being stored in, who has access to them, how often these various databases and sensitive information are being accessed. These are all questions that the government and its associated departments need to be asking itself, particularly as we're approaching a situation where every Australian will have a section of their data stored within a database by their telco on behalf of the government.
I don't know about you, Claire, but my emails are getting very dull. They are very dull. I mean, I dare someone to keep them. They're so boring, really. And I think a lot of people will change their behaviour, won't they?
One man's trash is another man's treasure. So while you may think that your emails are dull, who knows what kind of information they can glean about you and pass on to various intelligence security agencies.
Oh, Claire, you're trying to freak me out. Okay, let's move on. Facebook is trying to woo Chinese advertisers despite being banned by China. How does that work?
Oh, this is a really interesting move by Facebook. They're lobbying Chinese corporations and Chinese businesses to advocate for the business gain that Facebook would offer them. So they're basically getting these corporations and businesses to lobby the government on its behalf to bring Facebook or a form of it to the Asian region, because that's where Facebook needs to go next if it's going to continue to be successful.
So how will it all land? I mean, even though Chinese users can't access its service, they want to pitch this to the companies. What's the sort of time frame for rolling this kind of stuff out?
I don't think Facebook has made any kind of time frame promise, but I think what they're probably envisioning is some kind of watered down corporate version of Facebook, whether that means that, you know, maybe they'll only allow pages of professional corporations to exist first, for example, so people can view these pages and and visit the business benefit that these businesses have to offer the consumer landscape. And then I think what they're hoping is that they can slowly but surely integrate the rest of its services once the Chinese government becomes comfortable with the idea of a sort of Western social media app and its corporation existing within the Asia-Pacific region. Sounds so like, I think it's baby steps.
Sounds like a long road. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, it's going to be a very long road before we see any true fruition in this space.
And finally, I'm not sure about this, but you can't find love on Snapchat, according to new research. Is that right?
Well, I wouldn't think Snapchat is the place you'd go to look for love in the first place. I mean, Snapchat is the place where you communicate with your friends the stuff that you wouldn't necessarily want other people to see or have existing on your device in perpetuity. The study does suggest that people who form relationships via Snapchat are more prone to jealousy and other negative behaviours that might unfortuitously affect your relationship. But I do think that apps like Tinder and Snapchat, they're cutting down on time for the busy person. And I think if you can get past the pretense and cut out a whole load of people that you just would take a lot of time to process if you're going on dates with all of these individual people. I mean, I think it's quite pragmatic. I think it's maybe cutting out some of the nonsense that exists around dating and really gets you to say, this is what I'm looking for. This is what I'm after. I'm too busy to spend a lot of time doing this. So why doesn't this app search for people on my behalf that already meet my standards that I've put out with my criteria? So I really do think this study ought to be taken with a grain of salt. I don't think you should be looking for love on Snapchat in the first place. I'll try Tinder.
Thank you for the advice. A very large grain of salt, perhaps, like the largest one you've got.
You might want to try some water with it as well.
Is Facebook better? Is that where people should be looking for love?
Oh, gosh, no. Facebook is where you should go to cyberstalk someone once you've been on a date with them and you want to see what they're really like, maybe who their network is, see their behaviour when their guard is down. Oh, but I don't think it should be used as a dating app per se.
I'm getting off social media altogether now after that conversation. Thank you for sharing, Claire Porter. Of course, is a technology expert. Been getting lots of your text messages on all of this. One complaint that I didn't ask Erica Betts about regional jobs. I'll give you this guarantee, Virginia. We will invite him back on and we will ask him that question. Stay tuned after the news. We're going to find out what's happened today with Essendon.